So I'm going to do a little bit of introducing, just a bit of an overview, and then we'll do some practice. So we've got. I'll just do a little exposition of the title of the retreat. So we've got the Awakening Heart and the Divine Abodes. So of course, the Divine Abodes are is a way of translating Brahmavihara. You know, so we've got the Brahmaviharas as one aspect, and we've got the Awakening Heart, which is a rendering of bodhicitta. So awakening, bodhi, and heart, citta. So citta is sometimes translated as mind, sometimes as heart, and sometimes as heart-mind. Why it would be translated as heart or mind, you know, that will become clearer as we go into the material. So basically, on this retreat, Rijamitra is the Divine Abodes, and I am the Awakening Heart, so to speak. Please don't take that literally. Rijamitra is going to be taking us deeper into ways of practicing the Brahmaviharas. And is there anybody here who hasn't practiced all Brahmaviharas yet? Have you all done all four Brahmaviharas?
I don't think I have.
Okay. Well, don't worry, because Rijamitra will thoroughly introduce them. But partly what we're going to be doing is, you know, pointing to ways in which we can approach these states, these divine abodes, more directly, more effectively, and also unpack something of what they're, you know, what the practice is really about. So that's what Rijamitra is going to be doing, without putting anything on you. what I'm going to be doing is, we're actually focusing more on the heart. And to focus on the heart, we need to focus on the body, because the heart is part of the body. So without experiencing the body, we can't experience the heart. So this is one reason why I think it's better to use the word heart than mind for citta. Because if I use the word mind, most people's association is obviously with the thinking, the conceptualizing mind. And it ain't that. It's not the conceptualizing mind. It's more the entirety of our being, the wholeness of our being. And even the wholeness of being itself. Now, I'm not suggesting that there is something out there called being. So we're avoiding sort of language which reifies and makes it into some kind of substance. It's just like everything that is, everything that we can possibly experience is, broadly speaking, what I mean by being, at least in this context. So it's the entirety of our being. That's what the body is, in a way. And I'm going to be using this word soma quite a lot. So just to explain soma, soma means the living, the livingness of our body and being. Yeah. So we all have a sense of being alive. Is this true? Or not, generally speaking. you might not be able to put your finger on it, but there is a sense of being alive. And, what is that aliveness? Basically, we can see, hear, smell, taste, and feel, and so on. And also, we can engage in the mind, in the mental aspect of our being. Yeah. So all of that is a manifestation of aliveness. So this is what we're going to be focusing on to begin with. you know, this sense of aliveness. So soma is aliveness, you could say. So it's not just about the body, although it's primarily about the body. And from that we get the word somatic. Yeah, so soma and somatic. And in English, is quite an unfamiliar term for a lot of people, particularly the word soma and what that means. But it's quite commonly used and people don't realise, because we've got this term psychosomatic, which people take to mean it's all in your head, which is not what it means. Yeah, so when you have a psychosomatic illness, you know, it is a manifestation, in a sense, of the mind through the body. But you could say that all of our illnesses, including the illness of dukkha, is a manifestation of the mind through the body. You know, so it's in the body that it happens. And it happens in the relationship, or the apparent relationship, between mind and body. Mind and body are completely inseparable. You know, they're, if you like, well, I mean, that's why in Buddhism, mind is the sixth sense field. Yeah, so we've got the five classic body senses. You know, so seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and the mind is the sixth sense. You know, so they are, you know, that is making that very point, that the mind is inseparable from the other senses. So it isn't about somehow leaving the mind behind, but it is about the mind coming into, how could I say, coming into its natural relationship with the other senses. Because what the mind does, when I say mind, I'm going to mean the conceptualizing mind, yeah, the mental activities, yeah. So what the mind is doing, it has its place in our being, but it's like it's sort of it's shoved all the other senses out. You know, so the other senses take up only a comparatively small amount of our being, our experienced being. And the mind is the largest part of it. Yeah. So we know this from the fact that, well, I assume, if you're anything like me, we spend a large amount of our lives primarily thinking, imagining, you know, and, you know, doing mental stuff. You know. The word that we often use for this is prapancha, which is conceptual elaboration, or what's the other word we use for it? Proliferation. Yeah, so mental proliferation. I always tend to say prapancha because I find proliferation a bit difficult to say. So mental prapancha, yeah. So it's the state of being, you know, a being in the mind, believing in a way that the mind is what we are. So, you know, that's what we're counteracting by coming into the soma, coming into the body, coming into our being. Anyway, bodhicitta, yeah. So bodhi is awakening or enlightenment. And citta, as I've been saying, is mind-heart. So the bodhicitta is, you know, I'm sure you all know this, but it's a Mahayana teaching. Bodhicitta doesn't exist in the early Buddhist teachings. It doesn't exist as a concept. It does exist as, you know, if you like, an actuality of awakening. Yeah, so the Buddha, he is a full exemplification of bodhicitta. But as the teaching became, in the Mahayana, it became distinguished as a particular, I'm going to have to say thing, it became distinguished as a particular thing. And it has two aspects. There's the what's often called the relative aspect and what's called the ultimate aspect. The relative aspect is the practice that we do, and in particular, you could say, the relative aspect became more and more identified with compassion. Yeah. So it's... excuse me, I've got something in my throat. It's the compassionate motivation to awaken. Now, again, as you surely know, it's usually characterized as the compassionate motivation to awaken for the benefit of all sentient beings. You know, in other words, what we have here is what we call the Bodhisattva ideal. You know, and the Bodhisattva, you know, makes a vow to gain awakening in order to save all sentient beings. Yeah. So you could say, well, in that sense, what we're dealing with is a myth. It's quite clearly a myth. It's a positive myth because it's impossible for any one being to awaken all other beings. Otherwise, you'd have a big argument at the end when almost all beings are awakened. Who's going to awaken the last ones? Because they've all vowed to awaken all beings. Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, the whole thing, it doesn't stand up to rational analysis, but it's not meant to. You know, it's meant to invoke a certain spirit of, you know, it's not, you know, it beings are suffering. Yeah. And the Dharma is the way to the end of suffering. So, you know, if you realize that yourself, if you even just get a sense of it, it's obvious that all beings need the Dharma. So we're not going to go off and become Pratyeka Buddhas, that is, people who become Buddhas, but you know, just stay in their cave and don't bother to teach it to other people. You know, again, a mythical being, in contradistinction to the Bodhisattva, who goes out and saves all sentient beings. Yeah, so we don't want that. But at the same time, we do want to awaken. In fact, it's absolutely vital that we wake up. If we try and be a Bodhisattva without waking up, well, it's just a complete waste of time. Yeah. It's not possible for somebody who's not awake to be a Bodhisattva. Yeah, so, I mean, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding of the Bodhisattva ideal in that sense. You know, that it's based around the idea that the Bodhisattva holds off becoming awakened until all other sentient beings are awakened. And again, you know, it's mythic, it's poetic, if you like, but it's not to be taken literally. You know, the more awakened we are, the more we can actually help other beings to awaken. You know, if we don't know what the hell we're talking about and are just, you know, talking as it were, as we've read it in a book or heard people talking about it, what do we have to offer? Yeah. So it's like, to the extent that you know, just bringing it down to our actual experience now, you know, in our Dharma practice, to the extent that we've realised the Dharma, to the extent that we've cultivated metta, or, you know, any other quality, to that extent we can effectively communicate it. Yeah. If we haven't actually realised something, if we haven't brought it into our being, then we can't effectively communicate it. Yeah. So I'm covering quite a lot of ground here, which is quite sort of basic, but, you know, I think it is good just to get some of these conceptions and misconceptions clear before we go into the actual practices. So, is anything that I said so far giving rise to any questions at all? Good. Right, so I'll leave that there. If anything occurs to anybody, we do have the groups coming up later today, so yeah, this kind of thing can be discussed. So in order to approach the awakening heart, we need to be embodied. In fact, in order to practice meditation and the Dharma in any way whatsoever, we do need to be embodied. Yeah. All meditation practice is embodied practice. In other words, all meditation practice is somatic. You know, it involves the living energy of our being. And if we're not engendering the living energy of our being, by definition, almost certainly, we're in prapancha, we're in proliferation. So let's just sit. Let's just take a meditation posture, an initial one, and let's just get a sense of what's going on. I'd like to suggest we just start by simply just sitting, not even doing any setting up. We're just sitting here. We're in the meditation posture. So we're quite specifically not doing any practice. We're not cultivating something. We're just noticing what's going on. So what is going on? Where is the awareness going in your experience? Just left, so to speak, to its own devices. So we're going to sit like this for about 10 minutes. And the only thing you have to do apart from noticing is to avoid doing any practice. We're just sitting here. What are you noticing?